the shift to sustainability is a long-term structural trend, is what I would say. And it's going to come in and out of political favour. It's not going anywhere. The economy is moving. And more than that, Australia has a chance to lead in sustainability, given there's a vacuum coming out of the US. And I'm really bullish on that. I'm really excited by it.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Executive Director of Media at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land, and we pay our respects to the traditional custodians of country and elders past and present. In this episode, we chat with Rachel Halpern, Head of Sustainability at JANA Investment Advisors, about the role that asset consultants can play as more institutional investors rethink stewardship, and how best to integrate ESG themes like climate, human rights, and social impact in their investments. Now, I believe we haven't interviewed an asset consultant in this pod for many, many months. And for those who are not familiar with JANA, JANA is in fact the largest asset consultant in the country, advising assets under management of more than 1.3 trillion Aussie dollars. And later, before we end this episode, Rachel will also share a case study or two on how institutional investors can balance their duty to deliver strong returns while investing responsibly. What does a leading consultant like JANA look for in fund managers beyond the numbers? Rachel, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Michelle. Good to be here.
Now, tell us about JANA and its beginnings in sustainable investing.
JANA's been an investment consultant in the Australian asset management landscape for over 30 years, got really deep partnerships with our clients across the institutional investment landscape, from super funds through to insurers, not-for-profits, universities, the whole spate of institutional investors. And we've had, I guess we've been on the sustainability journey that reflects that of our clients, starting a number of years ago in terms of looking at exclusions through to today, integrating sustainability into really all that we do in portfolio management.
A bit of a bird's eye view question. Can you name three key trends or themes in terms of how insto investors have changed their views or portfolio approach, given all this conversation that we're now having on sustainable investments? Like I said before, the 1.3 trillion that you advise on, I almost fell off my chair. I remember talking to JANA when it was in the tens of billions of dollars, and it is insane. So what are the key investment themes that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes, well, I would preface this answer, though, by saying that it's not just investor or consumer sentiment that is driving the interest in sustainable investing. It's very much regulatory requirements and the financial modeling that institutional investors are doing to show that sustainable investing is not only not concessionary, by that I mean it doesn't cost you returns, it actually drives returns if you can take it into account in the right way. So the themes that I would mention that have been coming across my desk in the past year or so have been, I mean, further than that, but just let's talk most recently. You've got climate, obviously, I mean, and that is definitely driven by regulatory requirements and financial modeling, and it's a whole of portfolio consideration. And then you've got more impact themes like affordable housing, where there's a really strong desire driven by consumer sentiment or consideration of what members want, super fund members are looking for in their super investments. And then somewhere in between those two, you've got themes like natural capital that some institutional investors are considering to be a whole of portfolio issue, and some are considering it to be a more niche area that they're looking to allocate capital to as a separate and distinct, in a separate and distinct strategy.
There's a lot there that investors have to consider. And I like how you did point out about regulation, because the misconception is that if you invest responsibly, you're shaving off whatever it is, 0.5%, 2% off your returns. I must admit, though, that when I look at my superannuation options, and I do have, I've split it into the different options, there is still a difference between sustainable investment returns and the default and conservative. So I feel like it's still an ongoing conversation right now.
Well, Michelle, I mean, I would ask you which super fund, I won't, but you know, I don't think that that is the case across the board. There are some sustainable investment options that outperform.
Fantastic. Well, I'd like that to be consistent because I do have money on sustainable investments. Now let's go into the nitty-gritty of asset classes. Briefly, how will the return profile of Australian equities, US equities, and fixed income change in the next 10 to 20 years? I know this is a little bit of crystal ball gazing, but truly, genuinely asking about how are we managing climate and biodiversity risks and how is that impacting returns?
The first thing I would say about climate and biodiversity risks is that you can't diversify away from them. An institutional investor holding all of these asset classes will always hold all of these asset classes. These are risks that will crystallize with increasing frequency into financial risk and outcomes on the portfolio in the next 10 to 20 years. So if you start from the premise that you can't diversify away from these risks, the regulatory required approach is to do climate scenario modeling. And I think we're going to find we're in a world where we're doing modeling on natural capital as well in the not too distant future. And that requires institutional investors to look at what the likely return impact of climate and potentially natural capital will be on the whole portfolio. We've done that type of modeling, and it does show that there is going to be a negative impact on the return due to climate, you know, even that you can even see in 2040 and increasingly so as the time goes out to 2050 and 2100. The interesting thing to think about, the core point, I suppose, the nuance is the cost to the portfolio depends on when the world transitions. And because think of it like it's cheaper in the long term to invest, and that requires money, in the transition and adaptation early. And as with most things, procrastination is going to lead to a higher cost. So we don't know. So that's why, you know, you've got different scenarios that are being modeled out, and we don't know when the world will take action and at what speed. But that all affects the, you know, the dispersion, or sorry, the difference in risk return profiles across the asset classes. One universal thing I would say is that as we get better data, and we will get better data, we've got great data at the moment in climate, and that's only increasing with mandatory reporting, but we'll get better data in natural capital, we'll get better data in sustainability, social issues, and that's going to mean that there's going to be a dispersion, I believe, in the risk-return profiles across all of the asset classes between those companies and assets that understand and preempt and manage those risks well and those that don't.
Yes, there will definitely be clear winners and losers, I believe. I mean, you talk about procrastination, and then there's also what they call just transition, especially for a country like Australia. Now, many super funds are building up their in-house investment teams to address their growing asset base. We just talked about the 1.3 trillion number. This wasn't the case 2 decades ago when they were largely working with all the top three asset consultants, if you like, here in Australia. So how has the role of the asset consultant changed to support this new dynamic of more super funds building their investment muscle in-house?
I would say two things. That in terms of sustainability, we're integrating sustainability into and in compliance with regulatory requirements that derive the sustainability-related regulatory requirements into all of our core services. So it's not as if you've built an in-house capability, an in-house sustainable investment capability, you don't require any sustainability services from an asset consultant, because they're not necessarily standalone. They're integrated into the whole offering, which requires the support of a sustainability team within an asset consultant. The second thing is that I would say that we've created and we partner with our clients by creating more forward-looking advanced tools that we see can be adapted by asset owners in a more plug-and-play modularized fashion so that they can pick up and think about, okay, well, we're going to do a deep dive into a sustainability theme in any part of our portfolio, and that's where we'll come in on a project-by-project basis.
Speaking of the plug and play and all these innovation and new things that you're doing, Jana is holding an investment conference next month where there will be a session on sustainability. Do you anticipate you'd be talking about this, or what can you tell our listeners in terms of what they can expect from the session if they're attending it?
Sure. So yes, we've got our conference. It's coming up early September on the 4th, I think, in Sydney. We in attendance will be a large range of our clients, as I mentioned, super funds and not-for-profits, universities, insurers, those type of institutional investors. The theme that I'm hosting on sustainability is actually a focus on stewardship. For those who of your listeners that don't know, stewardship is very much about understanding and managing the sustainability risks in your portfolios for financial returns and real-world outcomes. So a large number of our clients do have stewardship programs, and we're looking at what's worked and what hasn't worked, looking to explore. I've got representative from REST and Federated Hermes on the stage with me, and we'll be looking at what their recent experiences have been.
I think we'll have to do a part two after that conference and find out what the key takeouts are. Now, I did promise our listeners that we're going to talk about case studies. Like, how does this look like? Can you give a case study example of how risk return differs with a sustainability lens over it at a company level or at a portfolio allocation level?
What you'll find with a sustainability lens is it's just more information, and it's likely to be more financially material information. So an example we found in doing a natural capital materiality assessment recently in public equities is that we looked at Orica, you know, well-known name, and there's a lot of publicly available information out there, but it's kind of like sifting through the noise to find the signal of, okay, so what is actually financially material here that we're only going to find if we take a natural capital lens. And what we found was there are a number of, you know, lots of polluted sites that were required remediation, and that the company was forecasting certain remediation costs that looked really undercooked to us, given that there were a number of sites, contaminated sites, that had not been yet remediated. And indeed, further than that, a number of sites where it wasn't known if they were contaminated. So the risk was unknown, and that can potentially be really lead into unclear, unbudgeted cleanup costs that could be financially really material. Mm. And that's what an investor needs to know when they're looking to steward an asset or indeed rebalance their portfolio and to like reduce the financial exposures.
Honestly, I think there was a time when you look at a report and they have forecasts on these remediation and you take it as it is. But I'm seeing as well that fund managers are proactively going out there company by company and making sure that they are transparent about these uncertainty or unknown costs.
Well, they're doing it if they're active managers. So they're not doing it if they're passively holding the stock. But where they've got a real belief in the stock and they actively hold that or overweight to it compared to the benchmark, then yes, I do see increasingly a lot of resource going to discussions and deep stewardship with the company.
We've covered a lot of ground here, but is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I would say I have a lot of conversations around, the US, how depressing. But, you know, the shift to sustainability is a long-term structural trend, is what I would say. And it's going to come in and out of political favor. It's not going anywhere. The economy is moving. And more than that, Australia has a chance to lead in sustainability, given there's a vacuum coming out of the US. And I'm really bullish on that. I'm really excited by it. You know, Europe's got supply chain legislation that's come in. We've got critical minerals that could be really well received compared to globally available critical minerals if they needed to be ethically sourced. So that's just one example of an opportunity. And I like to end on a positive note.
Definitely. I've read about that. There's a lot of excitement around critical minerals and how Australia is at the vanguard of proper procedures and ethical investing. Again, it's really great to have you with us, Rachel, and good luck at the conference next month. We will share the link to that on the show notes in case anyone's interested to know more about it. But once again, Rachel, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Greener Way. I'm Michelle Baltazar from FS Sustainability. Until next time.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.